Sisterwood was started by me and Flo. We're actually sister-in-laws. And the reason we started it was because initially our moms struggled with visual impairments. We decided to create a brand that's inclusive and accessible in a way that other brands aren't catering to products on the market.
We should be taking care of our hair like we do our skin and also taking care of the scalp. So that's where it all started.
Growing up in the Bronx was tough. I had a really tough upbringing. I was walking home from school one day and I got stabbed and robbed. That in itself was just a huge eye-opener, and it made me reflect on life, and it was a point in my life where I felt like everything was going wrong. That, I think, was the most difficult thing throughout this process, was having manufacturers say no to us. We almost started feeling defeated, and we're like, we're never going to create this product because everyone wants a benchmark, but we don't have a benchmark for this product, until we eventually found a manufacturer that said, yeah, that's great, but it's going to take you guys a long time to cost you.
There's a lot of support, and then when there's something negative, that motivates you more. You're like, yes, I can do it. No one can tell me I can't do it.
Just quickly before we get started, guys, if you've been enjoying the podcast, can I please ask that you consider leaving a 5-star review and subscribing on whatever platform you've been listening? It really helps the podcast grow. All right, third podcast of the trip. This is, I'm calling it, the People's Choice podcast. Obviously, we had that reschedule, so we had a spot open up. So it was pretty last minute. I put a story out, hit me up with some founders in Melbourne, some really cool business owners that are trying to make something cool happen. And you guys are actually submitted like 2 or 3 times. So we have Rena and Flo. Obviously, Flo's going to join us in about 15 minutes. She'll jump in. But we've got Rena from Sisterwood, an amazing brand, doing some really cool things, doing things differently their own way. Two mums making things happen, chasing their dreams. So super inspirational story. I can't wait to get to know both of you a little bit more. And then we'll dive into what inspired the business, what you guys are doing differently, and all that. But for everyone listening and myself, let me know, what Sisterwood is and why it's such an important thing for you guys and how you guys are doing it your own way and a little bit differently to everyone else.
Thanks. Thanks for having us, Dylan. It's actually really cool to hear that people submitted us because we are still such a small brand.
Yeah.
So Sisterwood was started by me and Flo. We're actually sister-in-laws.
Okay, cool.
We decided to start the business together. And the reason we started it was because initially our moms struggled with visual impairments. So we decided to create a brand that's inclusive and accessible in a way that other brands aren't catering to products on the market. And the reason we did that was because there's an overlooked and underserved consumer audience, and that's the blind and visually impaired community. So we decided to do extensive research and dive deeper into how we can make our products accessible and inclusive. And what we ended up doing was partnering with Vision Australia to ensure that we incorporate universal braille on a legible global scale. So we did that with them, and then we decided that it wasn't good enough because only 10% of the population can actually read Braille.
Okay.
So we decided to create our own tactile imprinting system, which consists of horizontal lines for shampoo and dots for conditioner. And that was great. And we decided to take it a step further and actually create innovative formulations for the blind and visually impaired community. What that means is that we created tactile formulations. So our shampoo has these tiny biodegradable microparticles. And they serve two main purposes. One is to serve as a gentle scalp scrub, and the second is to serve as a sensory experience. So everyday people, including the blind and visually impaired, can differentiate products in the shower. So that's our core main differentiating factor when it comes to our innovative ingredients and being accessible. But the product's real purpose is ultimately to bring hair back to its healthiest state, neutralize chemical and heat processing. So a lot of girls like to bleach their hair, dye their hair. So it initially works with native Australian ingredients to neutralize all that chemical imbalance and bring it back to its healthiest state.
I love that. I love how you guys are doing it differently. And it actually, when I saw what you guys are doing with the packaging, so it's obviously readable and understandable by people with vision impairment, it made me think, holy crap, like, I can't believe there's not every business isn't already doing this. You know what I mean? Particularly in today's day and age. Yeah, so it's an amazing thing you guys done. And I did some research myself. Where's the stats here? So 43 million people in the world live with blindness. Yes. And 295 million with moderate to severe visual impairment. So it's really, it's an amazing thing that you guys are doing, but where did it come from? Did you guys have a personal connection to this? Like you said, why is it so important for you to be inclusive in this way to this group of people who often, you know, would be left out or forgotten by the beauty industry?
Absolutely. So when we decided to launch the brand, the first thing we asked is, why are we bringing these products to market? What is our differentiating factor? How are we going to add value in a really saturated market? And Flo and I initially knew right off the bat, the answer is doing something different and actually solving a problem. So we decided to go to our family members. Now, Flo and I both have family members that struggle with visual impairments that are either blind, deaf, or legally blind. And we decided to lean in on those people, get their feedback, and see what their main, I guess, struggles in life were. And from there, we actually decided to branch out to their friends, their family and friends, and so on and so on. And 2.5 years later, we created a SurveyMonkey database and then a CRM database of 12,000 people in almost 2.5 years. And we pretty much went back and forth. And then when we decided to partner with Vision Australia, we leaned in on that community. And we found that even kids, when they go to camp, they're using tape and rubber band to put, you know, labeling the shampoo with tape and labeling the conditioner with rubber band. And we said, okay, well, how can we make that easier? And initially our moms were like, well, the first thing you can do is maybe start with the product inside. Both our moms said, we'd love to touch the shampoo and know that it's shampoo and conditioner. And we're like, well, hold on. How are we going to do this? Because if it was that easy, someone else would have already tackled this problem. And like you said, a lot of brands aren't doing this because it's very expensive. And you're probably wondering how are you two doing it? I mean, we're completely bootstrapped, so it is really hard. So over the last 3 years, it took us 3 years to fully come to market because of all the innovation required behind the formulations and assuring that it passed all the stability testing and the packaging, everything had to be custom molded. So there was a lot of work and research involved throughout the process. But to answer your question, it started off with our family members.
Yeah, I want to get into that whole, and we will get into that whole process of what actually goes into the formulations, goes into creating this new style of packaging, because obviously it is something that hadn't been done. And I want to get into your journeys with that, growing how much you grow as a business owner. But before Flo gets here, what I wanted to do anyway was obviously doing my research on you two. Obviously, I saw the amazing stuff that you've been doing with the business. But doing my reading and preparing, I realized that you both have had extremely interesting stories and upbringings yourself that have led you to here. And a big part of what we do on this podcast, it isn't just about business. It's about the person underneath the journey they've gone on, because obviously the things we go through, the challenges and the good times make us who we are. And like our businesses are reflections of all of this. So talk to me about your background, where you came from. I know you moved around a little bit as a kid. You've obviously got a cool, unique accent, which is awesome and really interesting. But like, tell me about, you know, Rena as a kid, what kind of life you had before you ended up in Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from New York. I moved to New York when I was, I was born in Albania, but I left Albania when I was a few months old. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm fully American at this point. But I grew up in New York City, in the Bronx specifically. Young Rena, you know, I studied law. I thought, yep, I wanted to be a lawyer. Joined the corporate world really early on in my life. I think I was about 16 when I started my first internship. I worked my way up, lasted in that company for about 7.5 years. And from there, I started working with beauty companies, doing talent acquisitions, headhunting, executive search consulting. And from there, pretty much started working with retailers. And then fast forward to, I guess, 5 years ago when I relocated to Melbourne, I continued to do that and doing a lot of, you know, talent acquisitions and headhunting for beauty, lifestyle, fashion brands. I've worked with some really awesome Australian brands, like Slick Hair Co. with Mia, Gem, and a few others. So it's been such a lovely journey. But I guess growing up, I have a really big corporate background. I don't come from, you know, having experience owning a beauty brand or anything like that. I do have experience helping beauty brands hire. So I guess that's a great back end of experience to have, knowing how to grow a team and what type of team members they need. But younger Rena, I mean, pretty much growing up in the Bronx was tough. I had a really tough upbringing. I lost my father when I was 13 years old. My father was extremely sick, and that was a huge struggle because my parents had, you know, just moved to the US. Mom didn't really know English. My brother is 6 years younger than me, so I decided to start working really early to help mom out with everything. So growing up in the Bronx was pretty tough. I mean, I had my fair share of stories that people love hearing. You know, I was walking home from school one day and I got stabbed and robbed, and that in itself was just a huge eye opener, and it made me reflect on life. And it was a point in my life where I felt like everything was going wrong. The only thing that was really accelerating was my career and my studies. Those were great, but having lost dad and having been through so much, I just felt like, you know, like, why is life happening like this? And work is what really always kept me happy. I mean, working with my clients and going into work every day, it just really fueled my day and my future. And I said, you know, like, life needs to get better. I need to work really hard, grow a good network so I can eventually get somewhere one day. I always knew I wanted to be a business owner. I wasn't sure what that looked like when I was younger, but I guess everything that happened brought me to where I am today.
So work and career and obviously being able to see what that progression could be was kind of your escape from the reality of living it, like that life. And do you feel like losing your father so young and obviously your brother was so much younger, you had to step up and help support the family at such a young age. Do you feel like that made you grow up a lot faster than most people your age?
Oh, it definitely did. I mean, a lot of my friends sometimes would get upset because I'd miss out on things or not go to certain things because I was so devoted to my career and I knew that I had projects and deadlines. I mean, you're 18 years old and you're worried about projects and deadlines instead of going to your friend's 18th birthday party.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
And the Bronx is like, obviously, I'm not from New York, but it's a pretty tough neighborhood, right? Especially like in the 90s and stuff.
Look, it was. I moved around a lot in the Bronx as well. I grew up in the Grand Concourse and eventually moved up to Morris Park. You know, it's not the easiest place to live, but as the years progressed, it did get a lot better. So it wasn't that bad. I guess it's not as bad as people think it is, yeah. But it is pretty tough.
And such a massive, like you say it almost so casually. Oh, I was just walking home from school and I got stabbed. What, obviously now that's so long ago in the past, you can reflect on it and you know, it is what it is. It's part of your story, who you are. But what was life like immediately after that? Like, did that rattle you? Did that put fear into you a little bit, or how did you move past that?
Look, Dylan, to be honest, for years I didn't speak up about it. I was almost afraid and ashamed of what happened. I felt like, why me? And, you know, it wasn't a pleasant experience, especially waking up in the hospital and not remembering exactly what happened. And it took me a few years to start talking about it. I still struggle with it, but I feel like it did make me stronger. Yes, was I scared? Absolutely. I mean, after that, I felt like every person that would walk near me, I was almost cautious, like, oh my God, like, what do they want? Or is something going to happen again? So it did build up this sort of wall. And I started having trust issues with just strangers, you know, at like in general. But it also built me up to be a much stronger person because I did get to a point in life where I felt like nothing really scared me anymore. And I was okay with that. As my mom always says that I'm pretty strong and tough and I go with the wind. Like, I moved here. It's a huge move to leave all your friends and family from New York City and go halfway across the world. So I do think that all of that has made me really resilient. And the person who I am today, which I think I like to think of myself as a pretty strong person. So yeah, it did make me a lot stronger. But in the beginning, I was a scared little girl. And over the years, I think it just built me up to be a lot stronger.
Leaving to come here, as you said, leaving your friends and family, is your mom still over in New York?
Yes. Yes. My mom and brother reside in New York.
And what's it like being apart from them? Was that an adjustment period for you? I imagine you had quite a tight knit family.
It was. My mom and my brother were my best friends and still are my best friends. I speak to them every other day, especially mom. You know, when you go through what we went through, losing dad and having to grow up in a place that is so foreign, your family becomes, you know, your best friends and you lean on each other for everything. We're still very much close. We go visit, they come visit. So it's lovely. It's a far trip, but it's
for sure. Yeah.
It's hard. But yeah, it was a huge shock in the beginning, but I've learned to live with it and adjust and it's okay. You know, I guess it's great that we have FaceTime and, you know, WhatsApp and all of these great things that we get to speak with our families every single day.
What brought you to Australia?
My husband.
Yeah.
So my husband is Australian. We've got two beautiful kids. I relocated because, yeah, I met my husband online on Instagram.
And he's from Melbourne?
Yes.
And you came here? Yeah. It's a big, big change because New York is one of my favorite cities in the world. I love that it's so fast paced and everything's happening all around you.
Yes.
There's a million things going on. You never feel like you're missing out in New York because like, you're like, where else would you want to be?
I know.
You know what I mean? The pace of that city, even though Melbourne, like you're in like a pretty cool area, but it's nothing in Australia is going to compare to New York. What was it like the rhythm
of like Australia, everyone being so laid back versus New York. Everyone's like you said yourself, your escape was work. Whereas in Australia, most people go home and relax to escape from work. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What's the difference in like work culture that you felt like in Australia versus New York of all places?
That's a good question. When I first moved here, it was a cultural shock in a sense where I felt like the work ethic was a lot different. Responses to emails, you know, we're not as quick. Corporate America, everything's just go, go, go.
All the time, right?
So here I had to learn to adjust that. And I almost felt like people thought I was a little mean or unprofessional or too prompt in a sense. I would show up to places and, you know, request documents be signed right away where, you know, in America, that's the norm. But here people are like, hey, how are you? How are your kids? And I'm like, oh, that's so incredible. Everyone's so laid back here. So it was a huge cultural shock, not in a bad way.
Yeah.
I've learned to really appreciate the way things are here, especially as a mom now. Mm. I think having that work-life balance is extremely important. Work isn't everything at the end of the day. And I think it's really great to allocate time for family. And that's something that I feel like isn't really done in the US. I feel like everyone just prides themselves on constantly working and just going and just not like having time to relax, where I feel like here in Australia, that's the really great thing about living and working here. So I do like it here a lot more for that matter.
Yeah. So like the life's like balance, particularly when you have a young family, like obviously it'd be epic to raise a like young family in New York City, but in terms of like that balance and everything, it is very different. But I want to ask you about your time in corporate. Did you go to like university for law and then realize you didn't like it?
So I went to St. John's University in Queens and I had some incredible law classes. And I always thought I wanted to be a criminal defense attorney until, you know, a mock trial case came up where some of the things that were on the case got a little bit too emotional for me. And I realized I really can't separate my emotions from my job. And that's something that you need to be able to do in that industry. And I just couldn't. I mean, I can't be a criminal defense attorney to a guy who, you know, they claim has raped young girls. So I felt, nope, this is not the industry for me.
Yeah.
So I, at the time I was a human resource director and a talent acquisitions director, and I was really much enjoying it. So I thought I'm going to stick to that path and pivot from law to human resources and business management, which is exactly what I did. And I feel like I don't regret my decision because I love all the experience that came with it. So yeah.
Now, working, so you were already in HR as like in recruitment and headhunting over in the US.
Yes.
Did you have the job lined up when you moved to Australia, or did you come here and then get back into the same industry after you were here?
No, funny enough, I actually had two great job offers lined up before I relocated to Australia, and I accepted one of them while I was in New York City. So when I moved here, I had a job ready waiting for me. I worked with that company for, I think, about 2 years before I decided to venture out on my own and do my own recruitment and consulting, which I still do today.
Okay. Now, my question was, you seem passionate about what you were doing, the experience you had in the corporate world and starting your own thing. Why make the change and start your own like product-based e-commerce business? Then you are relatively, you seem, anyway, I don't want to assume, but you seem quite happy and fulfilled doing what you're doing, and then like taking on starting this type of business. It's fun and it can change your life and it's extremely rewarding, but it's also extremely challenging.
Absolutely.
Why make that decision to put yourself through that?
So funny enough, I guess maybe taking a few steps back to give you a little bit more insight into my life. Aside from working corporate America, on weekends when I was in the US while in college, I was actually still an influencer myself. Mm-hmm. So I was being paid to post. I was being paid to go work out at the gym. I was a sponsored, I guess you would call it an athlete. I lived in the gym when I was in college and I used to love it. I had a blog called The Soul Excursion, which had close to 400,000 email subscribers.
Wow.
And I would just, you know, speak to them, talk to them about gym makeup. I used to do makeup on weekends. I guess very much the New York hustle.
I love it. I love the New York hustle.
Corporate America, makeup artist on weekends, at nighttime after classes were finished because I went to night school because I worked corporate during the day and then classes at night. So very much hustling at that time. And I think the reason why I wanted to start this was honestly because Flo asked me to be her co-founder. And I always knew I wanted to do something one day. And I found that this was the right time with the right person. And I knew that we wanted to make a difference and not just bring a product to market, but a product that's going to change people's lives.
Yeah.
And I had some great experience growing teams for other brands. And I thought, why not? Let's grow our own team one day.
Exactly. Well, you've got the experience. You said like you hired a lot for the beauty space, but just being able to hire good staff, good people for that space, you need to have a good enough understanding of the industry anyway. So you would have come with a bit of preparation for kind of what you were expecting now. All right, guys, just quickly, I've got some news. I've spent close to the past 18 months building the ultimate program that takes you through the complete process, and I mean the complete process of launching and scaling your very own e-commerce brand from zero all the way up to $1 million plus per year. And now with this program, what you're going to get access to is 15 modules with over 100 training videos and 23 hours of in-depth content, taking you through everything you need to know to build a successful e-com brand. And this is the important part. This isn't just stuff that you can look up on YouTube. This is stuff I've taken from real lessons and experiences building Happy Skin Co. from zero all the way up to an eight-figure per year brand. You're going to get access to loads of custom tools, templates, and calculators that I've used to build and run Happy Skin Co. There's going to be one-on-one mentoring with myself and other expert coaches. And there's also weekly group Q&A calls with myself to make sure you're feeling completely supported throughout the entire process. And now what I've learned from consulting to everyone from people starting their very first e-commerce brand all the way up to brands already doing seven figures plus per year is that there's a process and a framework to follow if you want to be successful with e-com. Now, if this is something you're interested in, hit the link below and go to join.viralbrandbuilder.com. All the information's there and you can book a call directly with me. Otherwise, send me a DM and we can chat there. Anyway, let's get back to the pod. Welcome. We have Flo's joined us. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
No, thanks for coming. So we've just been chatting about obviously the amazing work that you guys are doing. We're almost up to the point where I'm going to get into the launch process, but we've been getting to know Rena and her story and how she got to the point of obviously launching Sisterwood with you. But let everyone know kind of who you are and we'll get a little bit into how you got to where you are today and start getting into all the awesome stuff that you guys have done and been building with Sisterwood. So
my name's Flo and I'm the co-founder of Sisterwood. I started the idea of Sisterwood with Rena. So my passion is with skincare and my dad has severe psoriasis. So I'd always make creams that would help soothe his skin. And I love the benefits of the ingredients. I have a background in beauty and dermal therapies. And so I used to take care of a lot of clients and help with their skin concerns. But during COVID and that, I damaged my hair and I went really blonde. So I ate away all my hair and I was like, how do I take care of my hair? I wasn't happy with the products in the market. So once I started researching into shampoo and conditioner, I realized that we should be taking care of our hair like we do our skin and also taking care of the scalp. So there was a gap in the market and I wanted to create something that will help my dad's skin also because there wasn't much out there for his scalp and also take care of my hair strands. So that's where our conditioner helps nourish and take care of our hair at home. So that's where it all started. And
So we'll get into the whole product development phase because I imagine creating a product that's got any sort of innovation doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't take a week or two or a month. It takes several months, even years for a lot of people. Now you've got the idea, the change you want to make, right? And this is like for a lot of people listening that are wanting to start their own business. A lot of people do it from the same position of like, they've got a really cool idea or they see a problem that they're experiencing or a family member and they want to then go and create a product that can tackle that issue. But people don't know where to start. When you've had that idea, did you go to Rena straight away and be like, do you want to do this? Or did you start working because you've got the experience with like the beauty industry and the formulations and stuff? How did you start? Or when did you start actually trying to create a product?
So my business mind started when I was actually in uni studying accounting. I went and did a makeup course because I missed art. And then so then my beauty passion started there while I was at uni. But when you finish school, you don't really know what you want to do.
No way.
But it was good to have that accounting background because that has helped me now with having a beauty product and business. So then I went on to work in office roles and I was like, this is boring. It's not creative enough. So then I became a beauty therapist, had my own laser clinic business. And
What was it about? What was it about the 9 to 5 that just? If you're not that person for it, it feels like you're in prison, right?
Yeah. So that's where I started to venture off on my own and start my own business because I just didn't like having a boss. So, and because I would share my ideas in the industry I was in and there was no opportunity to take on those ideas to be different, how to grow the business. It was a food and beverage company and I was in their accounts and I would see how food would go into retail space as well. And when I seen that my ideas weren't being taken on board and then I was like, I'm going to go and start my own ideas and create my own business. And so when I started my beauty laser clinic business, I looked at articles and I was like, I can grow it to a certain point, but, and I like the way it makes people feel, but it's not big enough. I wanted something worldwide. And that's when I took the idea of making creams for my dad and damaging my hair to the next level. And I said to Rina, do you want to come on board? Rina had a recruitment company herself that she started that wasn't, was her learning curve of starting her own business. And then we ended up joining forces and just doing what we really love and what we enjoy together.
Did you always, like as a young girl growing up, did you always feel like you wanted to start your own business or did you learn that after trying different things and realizing shit?
I remember a long time ago when online space started and you'd be able to buy things online and I was excited to buy makeup brushes. And then I seen a website called iHerb and they had all this cool stuff on there. And I was like, I want a website like this one day. Yeah. And my degree was called Business Information Systems. So back then YouTube was new, you know, geographic data was new. So it was hard to wrap my head around what I was learning, but now I understand it all and it's all makes sense on having an online business and all the applications you need to help it run.
How did you start figuring this stuff out? Because obviously like when you get into online space for both of you, I'm sure it was even for myself, it's like everything's new, like technology changes so quickly. There's always a new app. There's always a new tool that you can use. Where did you start learning about like the online space, the digital space about e-commerce?
I feel like we were inspired by other founders and podcasts as well, listening to their stories. And also because of my experience in growing teams, I would always have to know the role of each organizational chart. Like, what does this person do? Ecom manager, what apps do they use? You know, Klaviyo, this, that. I would always have the ins and outs of what companies are using. And I would go to Flow and I'm like, Flow, you know, I grew this team from 3 people to 350 people. And I know what each staff member does. Mm-hmm. Eventually, this is what we're going to be needing. And Flo was always so amazed at all of that.
Yep. I'm like, Rina, you know everything.
Well, having licenses does help. And, you know, having years of experience in growing teams helps as well. So that used to give me insights as to what competitors are using.
We also went into like Priceline and looked at the back of products and see where things were manufactured. And that's how we sort of started our journey.
Yeah. Where did from hiring or being involved in the hiring process of hundreds and hundreds of staff over the years, what's like, and for a lot of business owners that aren't as lucky to have the experience you have hiring and helping other businesses grow, when they get in and they start their own business and they start, you know, having a level of success and have to start hiring, it's where a lot of people can go really wrong, can go really right as well. But what's some of the key things you would look for when you're hiring for a certain role?
For my clients?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, aside from, you know, the general job description and knowing what the person's capable of, I would extensively screen candidates 3 times before I ever submitted them to my clients. Mm-hmm. And I would try to get to know them on a certain personal level, but not too personal because in corporate America, you're really not allowed to get too personal. But, and it was about doing assessments as well and having them do certain testing criteria to make sure that they actually have the skills that they say they have. That's extremely important in being able to perform, especially in high level roles where you have major KPI targets to hit. So it was really in depth when it comes to filtering out the right candidate. And over the years, I've been able to grow a large database of extremely great talent that performs. And over the years, I guess you also learn to trust your gut. When speaking with candidates, You can almost see through certain candidates who say they can do all these great things. I mean, we're not all perfect at everything, but you're able to filter out like, this is a great candidate. They're going to fit in so well. They're going to outperform the role and they're going to be great. And that's just been something that I've been extremely fortunate with over the years, and trusting my gut as well when speaking with candidates and being to filter out the good candidates from the not so great candidates, unfortunately.
It's actually quite interesting recruiting, because we've had we've put out interns for Sisterwood, and seeing people's resumes come in and seeing how people can have different layouts and the criteria. Yep. It's pretty cool, even as a founder, seeing what people can bring to our business too. So
exactly. Yeah. And in Australia, like obviously over the last 5 years since you've been here, like, culture is a big buzzword that gets thrown around a lot. From your experience, obviously for like higher level roles, like you're going to need certain skills to do the job, but what do you find is most important for like a really good hire? Is it that cultural personality fit to the business, or is it the skill? And is it the same emphasis on culture in the US as it is in Australia, or it's more about they don't care as much about the personality? If you're really good at the job, then that makes sense.
Look, having been in this industry for 15 years this year, I have to say that it has changed drastically over the years. Culture was never something that was really talked about years ago. It was just about, you know, having the skill set to actually perform. In corporate America, people weren't really worried about, you know, your personality. They were worried about, can you perform? Can you do the task? Can you add, you know, more to the team? Can you add revenue? Can you bring business? How can you grow the team? How can you grow the company? Where now people would rather really hire personality and teach skill than vice versa, which I think is extremely important. I mean, it's great to have the skills. Some roles you should have someone who really can perform, but it becomes really tricky when you have someone that can really perform and has the skill set, but doesn't have the personality to fit into a company.
Yeah, yeah.
Or doesn't want to communicate and be open-minded and bounce ideas. Sometimes it almost doesn't benefit the company long-term. But cultural fit, I think, is extremely important. But at the end of the day, I think the question also is, what is cultural fit in certain companies? I mean, what does that look like? Is it cultural fit in how they're going to be dealing with the CEO or with their peers? Mm-hmm. And I think what matters most is fitting into the business model and fitting into the department that you're going to be working with. I mean, you want the person to get along with the person they're going to be reporting to. You want the person to get along, you know, with the person they're going to be delegating work to. If you can't get along with your team members in your department, it makes the job a lot harder as well. And almost to the point where people don't want to work with you or want to leave their jobs. So then the role gets undone. Cultural fit is important, but I don't think it's everything. Sometimes I think you'd prefer skill set over cultural fit, but I do see a lot of clients preferring cultural fit over skill set. It's something that I'm always telling Flo, when we start hiring, we're going to have to be not picky, but we need to know which roles need to have to focus on cultural fit. Yeah. And which roles really need to focus on having the skill set.
And being someone with so much experience seeing companies grow, have you already have an idea of when you start building out your team? And this is a question I get a lot. Okay, my business is starting to get consistent sales. I need to bring on staff to help. Have you had to think about what's going to be like your first hire, like the initial hires that you're going to add into the business?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing we did when we started focusing on the business was we created a very intensive, detailed business plan. And in it, we created an organizational chart of what we envision our team to look like in 2, 3, 5, 10 years. And we've highlighted it, you know, like things in gray are like who we're going to hire in 2, 3 years time, and things in darker are who we're going to hire in 5 years time. So we do have a really great vision of what our team is going to look like. And we're excited to hopefully be able to start doing that soon.
Yeah. And where will you start? Where's from the work you're doing now and how much time you have and what you're spending your time on, what do you think the first person you'll get in will be helping with?
Definitely marketing.
Yeah. What's the most important part of like any e-commerce business, right? It's the lifeblood of your business. If you can't market, if you can't sell your products, it doesn't matter how good everything else is. You're not going to have a business at the end of the day. Now, in terms of having the two of you, two co-founders, how do you balance like the work that you guys are doing currently? Who does what? How did you decide who's going to handle it, what department of the business? Because when people come into a business, obviously you guys are sister-in-law, so you have that relationship. Some people start business with people they barely know. Some people start with their best friends that they've known for 20 years. But how have you guys approached that decision of who's going to do what?
Well, with Flo and I, it was really easy. I mean, we both knew our strengths and weaknesses, and we said, this is what you can do, this is what I can do. How about we stick to that? I'm horrible at formulations and creative direction, and that's something that Flo's really great at, and Flo's really good with numbers. I'm great operational, all the back-end things. So operations, logistics is definitely my strength, where Flo really focuses on creative direction and accounting. So we split our work accordingly, I think.
Yeah.
And has there ever been a big theme of this tour, one of them, because we've been having groups of founders on, either two or three founders, is communication. Now, you guys seem like you're on the same page quite a lot, but has there ever been any ideas that you had that were different and you had to come together to work out, okay, how do we move forward in a way that we're both comfortable with?
I think it started from when we started to pick a name for the business.
Like, just straight away from there.
We're like, disagreeing with me. Until we both agree, then we were happy. We're like, yep, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And we're always looking over each other with what we're doing. So I'm seeing the emails that Rena's sending. She's looking at the content I'm creating. Like, we're always helping each other out as well. So
yeah, like people look at us and they're like, you guys are so in sync. You guys look like your best friends. But there's a lot we don't agree on. And there's a lot that we, you know, we'll have to discuss until we come up with a solution. And I think that's something that we're really good at, even agreeing that we disagree on things. And I feel like we always just talk everything out, even the hard stuff, hard conversations to have in business.
Yeah. Rena's taught me that you got to be honest and say how you feel and talk through it. And that's her.
Yeah. Like I always tell Flo too, I'm like, if there's something ever bothering you, I want to know about it. Or if you feel like I'm not doing something right as the co-founder in the business. And we always said that we're going to put the business first and put everything else aside.
You have to be accountable and you have to always show up for each other and show up for the business. That's another thing that's becoming more and more evident the more people I speak to. Obviously, I have my own experiences. I've been a co-founder. I've done businesses by myself. I've multiple co-founders with multiple businesses. And communication, that piece, it's like you kind of have to learn that. Like being honest is actually the best way, and being open. Yeah. And like, it's not a personal attack. It's like just, it's like a relationship being in a business, right?
Yeah. It's like a soulmate. Yeah.
Now let's go back to the process. Like I said, you had the idea, you've been doing your own formulations for skin to help with your dad's skin over the years. Now you get the idea for this product. How do you then go and find, is it a chemist? Is it a manufacturer who can start putting together these formulations? We spoke a little bit about before you started how they're unique, how they have that tactile feel to make it more of an experience as well. How do you then get that awesome idea you have? And how do you start? Because a lot of people get ideas and they don't know how to then go and start trying to create a product.
So we did do some research online on who we could contact, and you do email them, but you don't get a response. So Rena here used LinkedIn and she gets straight to the source, and then we had a meeting. But we have to know what we want before we go there. They help formulate, but you got to know what ingredients you like and what you want the product to do. And then they do all the technical side. And we really wanted it to be Melbourne based. We wanted it to be close to home and support our community as well. So yeah, we made locally. And
yeah. And I feel like throughout that process as well, is Flo and I agreed on one thing. We didn't want a manufacturer that was going to tell us, give us a benchmark, and this is what we'll do. We hear that a lot. When we started off, I said to Flo, let's do some research first. Let's see what products on the market we like in terms of quality, what products on the market we like in terms of purpose, and let's see where they're manufactured. And I started digging deep. I found a lot of manufacturers, some of the great products that we like, where they were manufactured. And we said, let's start off with these conversations first. Like Flo said, I went straight to LinkedIn. I was able to get phone numbers and emails and just contact them directly, gave them a call. And I said, look, this is what we're trying to do. Can we meet? Can we have a Zoom? Can we come in? And we started having conversations, and a lot of them we weren't happy with, because we're like, no, we're not giving you a benchmark. This is the product we want to create. We want you to do it from scratch. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was the most difficult thing throughout this process, was having manufacturers say no to us.
Yep.
And we almost started feeling defeated, and we're like, we're never going to create this product because everyone wants a benchmark, but we don't have a benchmark for this product. So this is the benchmark, the product that we want to create, until we eventually found a manufacturer that said, yeah, that's great, but it's going to take you guys a long time and it's going to cost you.
How long did it take to get the final product?
The whole process to launching was 3 years.
Wow.
So we had to test the product.
It was a long time.
We even had to find another supplier for our bottles because we weren't happy the first time round. So then we scratched the design and started fresh. So yeah, it's a process, but it's a journey that is really good journey, like the experience of it all. And you're creating, like, you're trying to create your baby and now we're trying to grow it. So yeah.
And what's one of the biggest things you've learned about yourself from the last 4 years since you started working on it?
Good question. I mean, I've learned that we're very resilient, even individually and together. I mean, we've gotten so many no's and we've gotten so many problems and so many things go wrong. And I think I was fascinated with the way we handled everything, considering that a lot of it was new to us.
How do you – go ahead. I was just going to say, I don't even know what I asked. Oh, what's one of the things, like the biggest things you've learned about yourself going through this journey, going out, starting this type of business?
I think it's just not being afraid and putting yourself out there and trying your ideas. So like I did a TikTok and I used our background culture of being Albanian and in my post. And then we got community support all around the world from Albanian community.
That's the best.
And then we were on Albanian news and I had to speak in my language and it's not my first language. It's something I learned as a child. Yeah. So I did my best and it's just putting yourself out there, not being afraid. And we're living and breathing sisterhood every single day. Like I go shopping, I buy something, I'll tell them about my hair care and then I get a follow. Like it's just
the best.
Yeah. So you're just, it's just part of your life. You know?
And how important have like your support networks been with your journey? Because like you said, there's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of no's. How important have like your support network been, friends, family to lean on in these times?
I think there's a lot of support. And then when there's something negative, that motivates you more. You're like, yes, I can do it. No one can tell me I can't do it, you know? Yeah.
We've been very fortunate with a huge support system as well, including our friends and family, especially like our moms, I think are our two biggest supporters. Mm-hmm. Which is incredible to have that. And then our community as well. Like Flo said, we're both Albanian and we have a strong community within the Albanian community that really helps us out. And we didn't think that would be the case. We actually thought it would be complete opposite.
Wow.
Which is sad in a sense, but we were really surprised to see that, you know, just because other Albanian girls were watching two little Albanian girls from small towns in Albania create something and they wanted to support that. And they looked up to us and we just were shocked to see that. And I feel like that in itself has helped us tremendously in terms of our self-esteem, us as founders, assuring that we're doing the right thing and influencing other girls out there as well.
Why do you think that you thought originally it might be the opposite?
Good question. Look, being Albanian is great, but unfortunately, you know, in the community sometimes a lot of people tend to not be happy for you when they see that you're doing something really big or when you're trying to achieve great things. There's almost this idea that Albanian girls are supposed to be wives and stay-at-home moms and not really do all these great big things. But, you know, when you grow up in New York and you work in corporate America, it's completely different. I was born in a small town in Albania where, you know, my family didn't even think I would go to corporate America and do a lot of the things that I did. So trying to tackle a startup that wants global domination someday is something that they're like, what are these girls doing? Are they crazy? So I feel like having that support was made us feel a whole lot better about what we're doing.
What does it mean to you both to be an inspiration to like the young girls in Albania thinking, hey, maybe one day I can do that. Look, if they can do it, then there's no reason I can't.
Yeah, I like to inspire people with my story. So I'm also a single mum. So people might perceive that single mums can't succeed in life or do as much as anyone else, but you can. Like, I think it's more motivating. My two boys like motivate me a lot. They're like, because they see my dreams and aspirations and they have the same dreams as me. So just because they're copying me, you know, so that motivates me to just being an example for others, being there for my children.
Yeah, I think Flo is a huge inspiration to our community, especially because it's almost looked down upon if you're a single mom. It's not something that our community takes easily when a woman goes through divorce for whatever reason. So I think having her be such a powerful founder and mom is a huge inspiration to a lot of girls in our community that almost makes them feel like this is okay. Like, and you can still achieve greatness if you're a single mom.
Exactly. Cause it's such a powerful thing. The role model that you're becoming for that, like that community, because obviously imagine it's a much more traditional old school kind of mentality and seeing people, you know, not just conform to, you know, the way it used to be or the way it's always been in your culture and being like, no, I'm going to do what makes me happy. And I know something really important for you, Flo, is like helping women find their voice again and refine their happiness or their spark when maybe life hasn't gone the best for them. Why is that something you're so passionate about why is that something you're so passionate about? We'll leave it there.
I'm passionate about it because in my past, I felt very stuck and I felt like I didn't have anyone to talk to. And then once you can hear other people's stories, it makes you realize that you're not alone. And so a lot of people can get stuck in their mind. And when you become a bit more open-minded, it helps you get through life and get through the waves in life. So yeah.
What helped like change your mentality or make that leap and decide I'm not going to stay in this life that isn't good for me?
You get pushed to a point where you try so hard to help and then you realize I need to help myself before I can help anyone else. So if I'm in a place where I feel stuck and I can't breathe and I can't get out of, that's when you need to burst that bubble and get out there and start breathing and start being myself. Like, who am I? I had to reborn myself. And what I did is I actually started to think about who I was as a young girl and who is she? Who's that little Flo? And I started myself back from then and started building, this is who I am. It's a new version of me because I was a very quiet child. I was very introverted, but I love talking to people now. So it's a complete opposite with life experiences. So it's important to get out there, you know, get your first job, go to school, talk to people, get out of your comfort zone. And just not be scared.
And stepping out of your comfort zone and doing all these things and going out there on your own and building your own life in what Flo wants, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's that been like for you? Is it something you'd recommend for anyone who was in a position that you were and doesn't know what it's going to be like if they're going to be happier going and taking the risk, getting uncomfortable and doing it themselves?
I always think that if something bad happens to you, it's still good for you. So it might have been something bad, but once you face that fear and you get over it, the best thing comes to you. So don't be scared of what you don't know. Because there's always better out there.
And what would your advice be to, like you said, just in any culture, not just Albanian culture, like single mums, there's like this expectation on them that it's harder for them to have a business and a life and raise a family at the same time. So, and the classic thing with mums is they put everyone's happiness before their own. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's this belief that you can't do both, when obviously you're an example that you can do both. And actually caring about your dreams is like the best example you could set for your children. What's your advice to people that have this dream but have been not investing in themselves or not feeling that they're worthy of doing it?
What you put in is what you're going to get out. So I always side hustled. Like, I always had a job, did makeup on the side. I've always done things that I enjoy doing. And if I don't like it, I'll go on to the next journey.
And on this journey, something I wanted to ask you about, obviously it's amazing all the things that you've done, but it's not easy and there's had to be sacrifices. You had to sell your Mercedes to help fund the business, right?
Yes.
So, talk to me about that and the sacrifices that you had to make to get to where you are.
So emotional.
Yeah, I bet.
I was really nervous about selling my car, but I had a great mentor when I first began, and it was Manny from Alaya Skin.
Mm-hmm.
I just reached out on Instagram, seeing that he was doing mentoring, and I'm like, I actually nagged him so much till he spoke to me. But yeah, I was like, So he gave me the tip. He's like, yeah, you need to sell your car if you want to start the business. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like just, I literally sold the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. I just put it up on Facebook Market and I sold it. So
she did, and then she got this little scrappy car that got her everywhere.
Yeah. I went to the auctions. This car pulls up, a little Fiesta, really old. It's bright blue. My dad's like, do you want that? I'm like, I like thought about it for a second. I'm like, okay. Put his hands up. It was mine. So it lasted me good 3 years. So.
And any regrets from doing that, or you made the right decision?
No, I made the right decision. 100%.
100%. Yeah. And in terms of working with mentors, like what role have they played for you guys? Have you learned on other mentors throughout the process to help you guys learn and take the next step?
Yeah. I mean, we're fortunate. We do have great mentors. Like Flo said, she initially started with Manny, who took her on. And then I joined in when Flo asked me to be a co-founder. And once we started off with the business, another great mentor who we're both extremely thankful for is Tara from Mermaid Hair. So she's incredible and building something amazing. And the fact that people almost see her as a direct competitor, I think is incredible that she's willing to help someone in the same hair care category.
Yeah.
And she's just been instrumental and incredible in helping us do a lot of the things that, you know, we had no idea what we were doing in the beginning. So she was really great at supporting us and telling us about all those things at the start.
And that's the beauty about like the way the world is now in social media. Like I know Manny, where we launched our businesses at the same time. So we kind of had a similar journey. But like, just like messaging that person, bugging them, asking for help, yeah. like it pays off, you know, maybe not the first time, but if maybe 3 times, 5 times, 10 times later, and it's that piece of advice to sell your car that if you didn't do that, you probably wouldn't be here today. You know what I mean? Like you worked so hard to get that car before and then just one day you were okay to sell it. Like what clicked? We just like, I'm just going to go all in on this dream.
I just really wanted to start my dream and start the business and do whatever it takes. Because we only live once and you don't know, like, I don't want to get old and be like, I didn't try, you know, I really wanted to try and just, and if it works out, amazing. If it doesn't work out, I'll keep going.
Like to live a life with no regrets is so important. What's the point of being like 80 years old and being like, I didn't do what I wanted, but I've got a Mercedes in the driveway. Like, you know what I mean? Now I want to ask you guys about some of the challenges along the way. What do you think is the biggest challenge you've had to overcome to get to where you are in terms of like the business journey?
There was a few, but I feel like our biggest one was really overcoming the fact that we made a mistake with some of the molding for the packaging. Not only was that a costly mistake, but it was a huge learning curve for us in learning how certain materials are and blowing up certain molds and really assuring that the braille was legible and having it tested out. There was a lot of work involved in that. So I feel like that learning curve not only opened up so much work for us, but it also taught us that you need to be really patient and trust the process and really vet out suppliers. And even if that takes longer, you have to do it. So I feel like that was probably one of the biggest things that we went through. There was a lot, but that
I also think COVID, just starting the business, we started right before COVID and then COVID started. But I think that fear of like, do we keep going? Are we doing the right thing? Like you didn't know what the future was.
We were terrified. Like Flo said, we started before COVID and hearing all these things were supply chain delays and things going up. I mean, we were initially quoted like an affordable price for importing our goods from China. And then that went to more than triple. And we were like, oh, okay, we didn't budget for this. And we budgeted for everything. And we started getting scared. We're like, is this going to cause us to fail? Is this going to cause us to not launch? And what is it going to do to us? So it was a very uncertain time, but we were able to push through. And the one thing I think that helped us a lot was just checking in and making sure that we updated our budgets constantly and we constantly knew what was happening and what it was costing us and lead times. So really staying on top of everything. But and it was scary.
And when you have those moments and like you've like there's a big problem you've got to work through or you feel a little bit stuck, which happens in the business journey when you're trying to launch, there's multiple times I can look back and reflect that I felt stuck and we felt stuck when I launched the businesses. When you get to those moments, what do you do to, you know, pick each other up and be like, no, we're going to find a way through this? Because a lot of people get stuck on the first problem or the second problem and they don't find a way through.
The biggest thing for us is our kids. We look at our kids and we're like, this is a big big part of the reason why we started what we did anyways. And we said, we can't give up. Like, these kids look up to us and they're always like, if they hear us talk about a problem, they're so smart. They're like, it's okay, mommy, you can do it. And they're telling us, or my kids will say, Auntie Flo, like, it's okay. Like, it's, don't stress. It'll be fine. And I feel for us, that is the biggest motivation and inspiration is our kids. Mm-hmm. And then I guess second would just be, we started this with a purpose to change other people's lives as well. And we still think about those people and we don't want to give up because no one else is trying to tackle what we're tackling. And we can't just give up on a journey that we've put our whole lives into. Like, instead of Flo selling her car and getting a home, she started the business. It wouldn't make sense for us to completely give up just because of a small problem.
I remember this one time, like, I was just emotional. Like, you get your emotions through the journey. But Rena had given me a necklace and it had the letter F on it. And then with my name, but when she wrote in the card, she wrote that I'm fearless. So like, it just seeing that, it like motivates you. So we like there for each other, through everything. So
yeah, we try to pick that each other up as well. Yeah. Like if I see that, you know, she's down or she feels demotivated, I'll try to do whatever I can to lift her up, or I'll recommend a book that really I love reading. And a lot of the books that I read just motivate me.
Rena's always sending me like founder stories and she's like, look at this. Look
like if they achieve this, we can. Yeah. Pick yourself up. Come on, we can do it.
What founder stories or businesses like inspire you most?
Oh gosh, there's so many. I mean, one of them is really old, but it's Honest Tea, which was founded I think in like 2003. The other is the Glossier story that started off, you know, as a blog and then a makeup company that's now a unicorn worth billions. And they did that as a D2C with no retail partnerships. And it's crazy. And when you go behind and dig deeper as to how they did that, the tools they used, it motivates you. And you're like, hey, like anyone can do it, but they just need to try and be willing to put in the years and hard work.
That's the thing. And that message rings through from your story. Yeah. It's 3 years to get the product. Now it's been another couple of years since then, but really hearing your journeys, like it wasn't your journey for the business didn't start then. Like it started so many years before that, you know what I mean? And like having the patience to, you know, keep working through those issues with the packaging and the mold and the formulations. Most people, when they want to start a bit like a D2C business, but I'm like starting off with e-com, like if they're not launched in like 6 months, max 12 months, they're like, I'm not like, it's too much. It's too long. But having the patience to be able to see that through and keep pushing, it's so important. Yeah. But so many of like the younger generation don't have that patience anymore. Yeah.
I feel like patience was probably the biggest thing that we had. We had to wait for a lot, especially during COVID.
Yeah.
And even with kids though. So we knew it was going to take us a long time to bring these products to market. And we know it's going to take even longer for it to grow to where we want it to grow.
And just even as just launching and everyone that's purchased and supported our business come back and they're like, we've bought it 3 times already. And then people will DM you and be like, I love your product. And that just shows that even when the business grows to the next level, more people are going to like it because the people who currently like it love it. So that's even, we know that it's just going to do amazing.
So you have people that are like repeat purchasing your products. How does that make you feel?
I think that was the biggest thing that we were like, wow, like really? Like we're so new, but we've had a customer that's already put through like her, I think it was 15th or 16th order. We were like, wow, that's, considering we've only been on the market for 5 months now. So it's incredible.
And with that D2C, obviously that's where everyone starts, but do you guys have a plan to get into brick and mortar retail one day? Is that going to be part of your strategy to grow the brand or?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. We're launching in the US with a retailer this year.
Awesome.
Which is really exciting. That's our second biggest market. And we noticed that that's the place where our second biggest orders are coming from, the US. And so it's really exciting. We also have a lot of retail conversations happening in Australia and we're excited to hopefully see those through within the next few months or a year or two. We'll see.
These retail deals that you're working on, what's really appealing to the retailers most? Is it the product or is it like the mission and the story and the purpose behind it all?
Both. I think both. Yeah.
That's the feedback we're getting, both. We've had a lot of retailers DM us directly and they're like, oh, this is amazing. Like we love the braille. Like, what is this? Can you tell us more? And then we'll have an informal conversation that will turn into a formal meeting where we're going through the retail deck And we honestly didn't expect to have these conversations early on. Like I said, we've only been on the market for the last 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. So we're still relatively new. We thought that these would be the conversations we start having a year after launch. So we've sort of had to start creating retail decks and all these things that we didn't think we'd be doing right now.
Also, even before we launched, Rina approached retails beforehand and we had meetings and we're presenting our brand before it was even launched. So just building those relationships as well, like because we can all, as the business grows, they are following our journey as well.
So. You've already got like your massive support. Like you've got your supporters, like getting submitted multiple times for this, getting 15 orders. Like there's obviously a bit of a cult community developing with you guys. And if you can continue to build that community as you guys grow, it's going to turn into such a powerful brand. And there isn't any limits to how far you can take. And I know both of you seem like you've got a lot of belief in the vision, a lot of belief in the purpose of it. Where do you think you get your self-belief from?
I get it from my mom. Growing up, you know, I was raised by a single mom because my father passed away, so a widow. And that watching her struggle to raise us and work 3 jobs is something that has always motivated me. Obviously, I want my kids to have the best life possible growing up. And despite not having my father around, life was good growing up. Mom provided us with everything, put us through private schooling, and she had to work 3 jobs to be able to do all that, helped us get things that we needed for school, kept us dressed and fed. It was incredible to see that we never had anything missing growing up, and that's something that I want to be able to provide my kids growing up. So that was the biggest motivation for me, giving back to my mom for all the sacrifices that she's made throughout the years. Because it was hard and, you know, watching her do that was difficult. And now that I see Flo raise her kids on her own, I know what my mom went through. So I know that what Flo's going through at the same time. So I always like to motivate her and help her. So I think for me, my mom is my biggest motivator and my kids. So making sure that there's a good future for all of us.
What helps get me through, I think, is also my faith. So I remember as a little kid just praying and I still do it till this day. And that really gets me through and like what's meant to be in life will be for me. And, but you got to go out there and try as well.
But putting your trust in something other than yourself and like being able to let go, it's a very freeing thing.
Yeah.
Like you said, you've gone through a lot of adversity in your life, but being able to start doing things for yourself and having that faith that it'll work out, right? Yeah. It's very powerful now. We'll start to wrap up. We're going through this really quickly. Time's flying. I want to ask you a couple of questions before we do wrap up though. It's the first ones I've asked everyone so far on this trip, because I think it's different answer for everyone, but it's really powerful for anyone listening that has a brand or wants to build a brand one day. What's one thing that you've learned over the last few years of building the brand that you wish you knew at the start?
Oh, one thing that I wish I knew, gosh. There's so much, but if it could be one, it would probably be that things take a lot of time. I had no idea that it takes so much time. I thought that, you know, we'd be able to start formulating 6 months and then launch the brand within 12, but I was completely wrong. So I wish I knew earlier that it does really take just a lot of time. I mean, 3 years later, here we are.
When you start, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. So that's actually a good thing, because as you're going along, you learn and then you kind of, there's like no going back now. You're like, I've invested so much time, money, you know, learning and everything that you just don't want to go backwards. Like exactly. You want to keep going forward.
And you have to be comfortable with the uncertainty that comes with it.
And that's like the uncertainty is even like what you were saying. Some people will be able to launch a business in 6 months or 12 months, but it's not guaranteed for everyone. Absolutely. And if you give up because you didn't, then you're doing yourself a disservice. You're only hurting yourself, your future, what you could build for your family. And as mums with both young kids running a business as well, obviously between the two of them, it's going to take up a lot of your time. What things do you do for yourself to help keep your mental health feeling, you know, good? Like you have your faith. What else, do you have any other rituals that you do to help yourself, you know, feeling energetic enough to have a family, have a life outside of, we were speaking about work-life balance before you came, but still, you know, get the best out of yourself in terms of a business sense?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's honestly taking time to go on walks. I love my walks, putting my headphones on, listening to podcasts while I walk, even if it means putting my little one in a pram and going for a walk with him. I feel like it's extremely important to get fresh air, clear your head, and just do something that makes you happy. I don't have as much time these days to go to the gym or do other things, but I think doing anything that makes you feel really happy and finding time to just do something that's going to keep your mental health in a good well-being, in a good state, is important. So for me, it's really just going for my walks or having time at night when everyone's asleep to just read books. I love reading. I find it really therapeutic. They teach me a lot, and it's just me time. So that's what I like to do.
What's one book? I know you're a big reader. What's one book that's kind of changed your perspective a lot?
There's a few, but one that I was recently reading that I think everyone would probably love is from the founder of Rodial. Rodial started by, I can never say her name, but I think it's Maria. And she started it. She's a Greek founder and she's incredible. She started Rodial years ago, and I actually got sent a PR package. Reading the book and knowing more about her journey recently has been incredible, because I had no idea that she went through all the things that she went through and operating lean. And it's a lot of the things that I'm learning now for us, like it's what we've been doing. And she was doing this like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's incredible to see that a lot of the things founders were doing years ago still applies today.
What was the book called? Sorry.
Gosh, I forgot the name of it, which is terrible, but, Overnight Success.
Okay.
Overnight Success. It's black and white. So I've been loving that book. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I forget what I asked.
I think it was
what you do for yourself.
Oh, yes. So when I'm wearing multiple hats, I'll be in that element and that zone. So when I'm working, when I'm with my boys, I'm enjoying that time with my boys. So they play soccer. So we're at training, we're at soccer games, and it's just fun seeing them happy, making them happy makes me happy. And then when I'm not spending time with my kids, things that I do for myself is I'd go for a run. I'll take some time to unwind and just, you know, have a nice coffee, just like any little thing to just have me time that makes me feel good. But I also, I enjoy it with family as well. So,
and like you said, the really important part is being, if you're working, you're working with your kids, being present in that moment.
Yeah, it's about balancing everything because you can burn out on in life. So you got to really take a break when your body needs a break. Have that sleep in when you need that sleep in.
Now, what I've done just for this trip, we'll wrap. I've got one last question. I don't know what the question is. The last guest left a question for you guys. So, I don't know what the question is yet. It's going to be the last question. So let me see what it is. Okay, cool. If you could define success in your own words, what would that be and why? What does success look like to you?
That's a good question. I mean, to me personally, it's having freedom. Not so much financial freedom, which is extremely important, but just having the freedom to manage your own time. To make time for your family, for your friends. Working a 9-to-5 doesn't really give you that freedom. I know because I worked in corporate America. I've owned my own recruitment business and, you know, two completely different lives. So having that freedom, I think, is extremely important to manage your own time and to be able to do things at your own pace without having to worry about, you know, losing your job or having someone say something. I think having that freedom is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
And if you have the ability to have that and grow a team and make an impact in this world, I think to me that's the epitome of success.
I love it.
Success probably for me would be helping others, like I get happy when I see others happy and be it a client, be it a customer, be it my kids, my family, Rena, like just putting some good into the world. And that's rewarding for me. So that's what I feel like.
We actually spoke about this a few months ago and Flo said, we haven't achieved success until I'm able to pay for someone to build their home or feed their kids or help another single mom accelerate at her career. She wants to be able for us to be able to give back to others when we come to a financial point in our business where we can continue to donate and help other single moms or kids out there. Mm-hmm. And Flo's always said, we haven't succeeded until we're able to freely give to others.
And I can tell you guys mean that 100% genuinely. A lot of people will want to fake altruism and giving back, but I can tell from both of you, it really is an important part of why you do what you do. I'm excited to watch you guys grow and be able to do that. Those questions, by the way, were from the founders of Pure You, the gut health brand. Yeah.
Amazing. They're doing great things.
They're doing great. They're doing really well. So we'll have all your links and everything in the show notes, but where's the best place for people to find you and Sisterwood?
I think online on our website, which is www.sisterwood.com, and then our Instagram.
Yep.
And TikTok, you get a bit more behind the scenes on TikTok too.
Yes. So
hit up the TikTok, everyone. Well, thank you both for coming to see us. I know it was only a few days' notice, but there was demand to get you guys on. So thanks for making the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
No worries. Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or you got something out of it, do yourself a favor, do me a favor, do your friends a favor and share this with them and they can come along on this journey with us. Thanks again and I'll see you next time.